half hour, I will be reading to you from the May 2021 Walter Magazine. We begin with the cover article, Dynomite Find, How the Dueling Dinosaurs Got from the Hell Creek Formation in Montana to the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, by Jamie Dement. The Hell Creek Formation near Fort Peck, Montana, is a barren, rocky landscape of sandstone, shale, and clay. It's an unforgiving land, but one that has preserved layer upon layer of natural history. In the Cretaceous period, 66 million years ago, this area in the southern part of the state was warm, humid, and flat, not dissimilar from what you'd find along the North Carolina coastal plain. On a warm June day in 2006, Clayton Phipps, a local rancher and self-styled dinosaur cowboy, brought his cousin, Chad O'Connor, for his first fossil hunt, along with Mark Eatman, a colleague he'd worked with on other digs, to survey an area of land owned by other private landowners. To a seasoned fossil hunter, bone is obvious. It just doesn't look like sand or rock. There was a pelvis weathering out of the ground, and they could also easily see what appeared to be an articulated femur. The trio noted their location and made the long trek home with big plans to return. After a summer of ranch duties, Phipps and O'Connor returned to the site to start the painstaking process of unearthing what they'd found with a brush and penknife. It turned out to be the full skeleton of a Triceratops, a great find for any fossil hunter. With 2 weeks of backbreaking work behind them, Phipps and his small crew thought they were almost done. They moved on to using heavy equipment to clean up the site around where the Triceratops bones were found. As Phipps emptied the backhoe bucket of excess dirt, he made a second startling discovery. Most of the debris in the bucket was light-colored sand and rock, but mixed in were dark fragments, definitely pieces of bone, but not from the Triceratops a few yards away. He realized that the bones made up a claw from a meat-eating dinosaur buried next to a plant-eater. After 3 more months of digging and excavation, Phipps had 2 complete dinosaur skeletons wrested from the earth, the Triceratops and a Tyrannosaurus rex. Phipps knew the value of what he had found, but he also knew that in order for the dinosaurs to be properly preserved and studied, they would need to be housed in an institution that could handle not just their sheer size, together they weigh over 30,000 pounds, but also the rigorous research to uncover the whole story. That's where the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences comes in. The North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, or NCMNS, hosts over 1 million visitors in a normal year within its downtown Nature Exploration Center and Nature Research Center. From its inception, the museum has been a repository of the state's natural collections, from ancient fossil fuels and naturalist drawings to its growing collection of living specimens. The dozens of scientists, researchers, and educators who work at the museum are leaders in their respective fields and all share a vision for collaborative teaching and hands-on learning. One of those leaders is paleontologist Dr. Lindsay Zano. Her work as a paleontologist has taken her all over the globe, from the Field Museum in Chicago to Mongolia and Thailand, to vast swaths of the American West. She works with exploratory teams, usually for months in the field, to track down fossils and study how changing climate and environmental conditions affected life on land during the Cretaceous period. Over the years, Zano had heard about Phipps' incredible discovery, 2 fully intact dinosaurs frozen at a specific moment in time. If the condition of the specimens was even half as good as reported, then the find could be a game changer. The dueling dinosaurs, as they had become known, would be among the most complete skeletons ever discovered of two iconic dinosaurs, and the T-Rex fossil would be the only complete skeleton of a T-Rex known anywhere in the world. These fossils could challenge everything we know about dinosaurs, including how these very famous species interacted. Bringing them to NCMNS would make the museum a global center for paleontological study. So in 2016, Zano and a team from the museum headed to New York to meet Phipps, who'd been storing the specimens there since 2013. The team also arranged to visit the Hell Creek Formation to get all the data needed for research, including studying the geography and topography of the area, taking soil and water samples, and looking for any other flora and fauna fossils in the area to understand the world the dinosaurs lived in. Armed with the knowledge that the dueling dinosaurs were indeed as extraordinary as expected, Zano and then museum director Emlyn Koster approached the Friends of the Museum about finding a way to bring the dinosaurs to Raleigh permanently. Within weeks, the Friends started a campaign to raise the money to bring the dueling dinosaurs to North Carolina. Meanwhile, Zano and her team started working with the museum's exhibits team to figure out how to showcase what could be the most important paleontology find of the century. Historically, museums have displayed fossils out of reach. But over the past decade, science museums have started building fossil labs in public spaces so visitors can watch scientists at work in real time. Zano challenged the exhibits department to come up with an entirely new environment, one where guests can step right into an active research laboratory where work is being done. Situated inside an extension to the Nature Resource Center beside the Daily Planet, the dueling dinosaurs will be an exhibit experience that will transport visitors 66 million years into the past. To create the space, which is expected in 2022, the museum will embark on an extensive construction project that includes reinforcing the floors with steel beams to support the 30,000-pound specimens. The dueling dinosaurs are unlike anything I've ever seen in any museum, says Eric Dorfman, director and CEO of NCMNS. We will be performing research in front of, and even with the assistance of, the public. It will be a unique experience for everyone involved. Today, the dinos are in the building, so heavy they can't even be housed in the same room. But it will still be more than a year before the public gets to see them. Visitors will see the skeletons as they are studied in labs, within the plaster preparations they were brought in from the field. They won't be fully excavated and assembled, as fossils have been in the past. Instead, the paleontologists will use CT scans and imaging to literally look inside the blocks of earth holding the fossils. I feel blessed to be a part of it all, says Phipps. He's particularly pleased with where the dueling dinosaurs have landed, not only in a stellar research museum, but in North Carolina. They've landed in a similar environment to the one they lived in while they were alive. They'll feel right at home there. At the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, the feeling is mutual. Says Dorfman, we're all thrilled to have this one-of-a-kind opportunity to house and research one of the most important paleontological discoveries of our time. It took more than 66 million years, but this unlikely pair has found a welcome resting place in North Carolina. This article was edited for Time. And from the locals department, the street genie. Sax player Freddie Green has honed his soul-searching groove on downtown Raleigh sidewalks, by Tyler Cunningham. You've probably encountered Freddie Green on Fayetteville Street or at his favorite Raleigh perch in front of the Memorial Auditorium as a performance lets out. The 63-year-old harvester of sounds leans into a relaxed boldness with piercing hazel eyes, often hidden behind his signature shades and locks falling well below his shoulders. Nicknamed the Street Genie for his ability to make the melodies of his beloved saxophone dance and bend, some say Green is Raleigh's longest-running street musician. While Green has played with the likes of gospel greats Shirley Caesar and Percy Sledge, and even graced the stage of Harlem's legendary Apollo Theater twice, street playing is his sacred space. Here he has found a raw and powerful connection to his audience for more than four decades. He's drawn to its simplicity, the direct line between musician and listener, where he can see and feel how his music lands. Hailing from humble roots in Franklinton, Green was born into a life of music. His first home had once been a neighborhood juke joint known as the Chicken Shack, where sharecroppers and the agrarian working class would gather to unwind and reconnect through music. Those storied walls were the foundation, and music was woven into the fabric of everyday life. If Green wasn't listening to his mother sing or his uncle play the guitar, he was running down to his grandma's house to play her piano. Music, he discovered, was not only a form of self-expression, but a way to bear witness to the world around him. After high school, Green studied music at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh, and then North Carolina Central University in Durham. Green followed in the footsteps of his idol, B.B. King, and took his velvety soprano sax to the street. There, he found refuge from the daily pressures of tests and school loans and the future he would need to create for himself. In the movement and pace of the people, Green could let the world melt away while he painted the air with his languid, long notes. Perhaps the greatest influence on Green's life was his mother, Flora, a talented artist and seasoned storyteller. She told a tale throughout his childhood about a young boy who strayed from the right path and was saved from danger by a street musician and his magical horn. Flora's story wrapped Green in a blanket of comfort and hope as he left college and struggled with homelessness in his 20s. When I look back, I think that story was telling me how to save myself with my horn, says Green. So I would just play. I would practice and practice for hours and hours, 8, 10 hours a day. I dropped out of society. But Green never forgot his mother's story and used her words to fuel him as he fought his way through those dark years. On one of those long days in the late 1990s, Green was playing on the corner of historic City Market when Chef Harvey Yancey was walking to his job at a nearby restaurant. Yancey heard Green before he saw him. I thought, wow, man, this cat is really playing, Yancey recalls. The world was walking by Freddie, but they didn't see who he really was. Yancey didn't hesitate. He told Green that as soon as he got his own place, Green was going to play there. Within a year, Yancey opened his Cajun restaurant and jazz club, Yancey's, and Green was its first entertainer. The gig was Green's first, and soon he was forming his own trios and quartets and playing venues throughout the state. This is when Green met Stephen Youngblood, a founder of When Grace Happens, a Raleigh nonprofit that supports the homeless and under-resourced. Youngblood, a powerful vocalist and pianist, invited Green to collaborate for an upcoming event. Several of the musicians were homeless, a reality that had been Green's just a few years before. This was a full circle moment for Green, supporting others who were on a journey with so many parallels to his own. It allowed him to share his riffs and phrases with an intimacy and vulnerability that served as a magnet to his audience. As Green's audience has widened, he remains as connected to the path behind him as he is focused on the one ahead. I've learned that it doesn't matter what anyone else says about you. It's what you think about yourself. Those words are particularly poignant when paired with the title track from his latest album, Ain't I Somebody? With his refrains, Green unfolds this rhythmic and reflective musical narrative about the inherent value of all people. Freddie plays from his soul, and he's playing because he's trying to reach another soul, says Yancey. So the next time you're meandering the streets of downtown Raleigh, pause and listen for the sound of magic happening. And when Green's musical storytelling draws you in, let the notes wash over you and carry you to a peaceful place of belonging. This article was edited for Time. And from the music department, Stories as Song. Vocalist Andrea Edith Moore turns the writings of local authors into a unique album. By David Menconi. As an album, Family Secrets, Kith and Kin is unique and uniquely North Carolina. It's deeply rooted in the local arts community, a work that is equal parts opera, chamber music piece, and literary song cycle, with banjo no less. And it boasts some big names among the credits, though their names not normally associated with music. Daniel Wallace, Lee Smith, Francis Mays, Jeffrey Beam, Michael Malone, Randall Keenan, and Alan Greganis. The album is the brainchild of opera singer Andrea Edith Moore. A soprano vocalist, Moore has sung on stages all over the Western Hemisphere, from the Aspen Music Festival in Colorado to the Hamburger Kammeroper in Germany. For all those travels, however, the Chapel Hill native didn't make her first album until coming home to North Carolina. Being a classical singer, it's not a straight shot to the Met, Moore says by phone from her home in Hillsboro, over barking from the family dog, Frank, Chairman of the Bark, Sinatra, in the background. Growing up, I always loved musical theater and Broadway. At age 10, I asked my parents if they'd get me a Broadway agent and move to New York with me. Well, that didn't happen. Pursuit of her singing ambitions took Moore to the North Carolina School of Arts for the last 2 years of high school, followed by studies and degrees at Yale University and Peabody Conservatory at Johns Hopkins University. Eventually, she made her way back to the Triangle, where she teaches at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and sings locally with the North Carolina Opera. A bit more than a decade ago, she initiated the process of what eventually became Family Secrets. Moore envisioned a song cycle based on writings from the surrounding literary community. In their empty nest phase, her parents had moved to Hillsboro, and Moore settled there when she returned from school. Some of the area's leading literary lights became friends, collaborators, and clients. Moore gave Big Fish author Wallace voice lessons, and she served as Smith's consultant for her 2013 novel, Guests on Earth, advising her on musical verisimilitude. So Moore enlisted Wallace, Smith, and other local writers to write stories to inspire her songs. Each was given the prompt of, quote, family secrets, and an assigned location, for example, a cemetery, a pantry, porch, and top of stairs, as the jumping-off point for their words. Then, text in hand, Moore turned to composer Daniel Thomas Davis, a fellow North Carolinian she'd known since their days together at Peabody, to set it all to music. The songs are sung by Moore herself, accompanied by a wide-ranging ensemble versed in folk and classical music, including Raleigh banjo ace Hank Smith. The album also includes narration from storytelling actress Jane Holding. There's a dramatic arc to it, from prologue to the end, Moore says. One thing I like is something Daniel remarks upon in the liner notes. As he was working through the texts, he realized that all these authors know one another. Thus, the people inhabiting their writings must all know one another, too. Those interconnections create this village. Wallace, whose contribution Pantry is about a mysterious hidden object, says that dynamic makes perfect sense. I think it's absolutely true that these pieces all feel like a kind of conversation between the works, Wallace says. The apex comes about halfway through on Chinaberry Tree. Written by the late Randall Keenan, who passed away last year, it's a true life story about the brutal murder of a beloved aunt by his uncle. The album is dedicated to Keenan's memory. He passed away before the album came out, but he was able to hear it performed live and was extraordinarily moved by the realization of his story in the music, Moore says. Randall had never put that one pen to paper in a book, but he felt that setting it to music was the right place for it to live. It was an honor and a big responsibility to be given that story and tell it with care. Family Secrets has been performed live a number of times in recent years, at UNC and in an operatic staged version with North Carolina Opera. Moore had planned for additional performances to accompany the album's release, but that will have to wait for the pandemic to subside. Given what we're still on the brink of as a society and a nation, it feels like the exact right time for that Alan Gerganis quote from the epilogue, Moore says. Quote, can't we each be saved from our worst selves? End quote. It's a really important question to ask ourselves, Moore continues, whether it's about politics, our health, or just being good neighbors and a civil person. Can't we just be caring about each other? It would be nice to see more of that. This article was edited for Time. Lastly, from our town and calendar sections, here's what to put on your radar this month by Addie Ladner. Throughout May and June, enjoy an evening meal outside at some of your favorite restaurants in the heart of the city. As an initiative of Downtown Raleigh Alliance, each Saturday, a different portion of various districts, City Market, Glenwood South, Fayetteville, etc., will be blocked off to offer more dining space along with live music and free parking. Extra space to dine safely and comfortably at downtown favorites like Sono, City Market Sushi, Raleigh Times, and Capital Club 16? We'll tip a glass to that. See downtownraleigh.org for map and parking information. And don't miss the last program of Carolina Ballet's 2021 spring season. they'll present Robert Weiss's production of a family classic, Cinderella, featuring an original piano score by composer and triangle-based musician Carl Muraski. We are very proud to continue presenting this performance 16 years after its creation, says Courtney Hilliard with Carolina Ballet. It excites us to bring new dancers into these original works, as well as new audience members. Cinderella is as much a piece of Carolina Ballet's history as it is Raleigh's history, and we can't wait for everyone to see it. The program will be live-streamed for 2 evenings, Wednesday, May 19, and Thursday, May 20, each at 7:30 p.m. The performance will remain accessible to patrons until midnight on Sunday, May 23. The performances are virtual. Visit carolinaballet.com for more information or call 919-719-0900. Lastly, gather some friends and head to Rougemont for one of the first in-person concerts in time for the start of summer. At the Orange County Speedway, Nashville-based Moon Taxi will bring a new concert experience to the Triangle with a drive-in style showing. Picnic blankets and chairs welcome too. Doors open at 6 p.m. Check website for ticket information. Go to maxmusic.com. Max, M-A-X-X, M-U-S-I-C.com for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.